Well, when it comes to shrooms, I mean, I have done them, and it has been fun, but it also has not been fun.
Yes. Well, even more so with shrooms than weed.
Hey, everybody. Wake up. It's time for Stoner Morning Show. Sit back, relax, smoke them if you got them. And now, Stoner Morning Show.
Well, some people do get panicky, you know what I mean? So it's sort of like, it's not that they've never tried it, it's just that they know that they, you know.
I don't fault them. I'm just admitting to you in the freedom of not having to do it to the individual that
Oh, yeah.
I say, aw,
Oh,
aw,
yeah.
I'm just like a little bummed.
It's like if you made pie for a dinner, and then you're like, hey, dinner's over, I made this pie. And then somebody's just like, oh, I'm full.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's beautiful. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's not like I don't hold any animosity. I just would hope that you would have enjoyed my offering to you.
Right. You know, I something happened inside the house that I'm living at before we got on this call that was kind of funny.
Was it a ghost?
Well, kind of.
Yes.
Because I went into the kitchen to make breakfast, and then somebody shished me because my girlfriend's mom was in the other room doing a medium shishing call or
Really?
a past life call. Yeah.
Yes.
Because she does that.
That's amazing that I guessed it.
And so I was shushed to be quiet because she's on a business call, you know.
Yeah. Business.
And she probably has to stay in tuned with you know, the spirit world. She doesn't
Yes.
want to get yanked out of it, you know. But that moment of being shushed because there is an adult doing something, it reminded me of that small period of time between Thanksgiving and Christmas when I would snoop around for Christmas presents and try to be quiet, and I didn't want to get caught, but it was a fun thing. I don't know. It was like,
When was the oldest that you actually did that, where you didn't have the patience to wait?
probably like the 8th grade. And that Christmas is when it sunk in that it would have broken my mother's heart if she knew that I wasn't surprised. Yeah. And it was exhausting to, I feel like when I was younger, I was able to fake my surprise more. But then as I got older, it was like it was more exhausting to live the lie.
So you just had to suck it up and be patient. I never got to do Christmas, but
Oh, yes, right.
I know at one point my mom gave me a punishment. She said you either get to get spanked, physically hit, or you could get go into your room and wait for 2 hours. And I said I'd rather get spanked. And then she was like, "All right, well then go in your room," because she knew I wasn't going to learn anything. Yeah,
That's funny.
It's the mature. That's my maturity level when I learned when I learned.
You called her bluff, and you're a poker player.
Yeah, let's go. Bring it on.
When was the first time you celebrated Christmas?
First time I
Right,
actually celebrated Christmas was when I was dating Jesse Spellman, in like, you know, I mean, we were already friends, so in my late
yeah.
20s, in my late 20s. And it was actually really, it was an awesome experience because they had like a family tradition of the youngest person gets to go into this. Her mother has a nice apartment in the upper East Side, but it was really sweet because, well, one, the apartment was, you know, probably, you know, I'm sure rent controlled. It's not like they're so well to do or anything, but it was just one of those apartments where I walk in, I was like, holy shit, you have such a, it's like a house in an apartment, you know? It was just bigger than I thought. And her mother would arrange it, would do it just sweet, you know? They had a little table set up with like a Christmassy scenario. They had the tree all well lit and with all the, you know, it was a beautiful, it was just picturesque, you know, and so Americana. And their tradition was the youngest person would walk in first, and they'd have a minute, 30 seconds to a minute to just have that room to themselves. And then the next would go, and the next would go like this. So, that's, and so I got to be involved in it. For my first Christmas, I watched the little brother first, and then the sister, then my girlfriend, then I went in, then, you know, the next sister went in, and they all just went in like that. You know, each one grabbing a gift, and then you start passing it around, and it was fun. I had already kind of went shopping once or twice before for, like, an individual for a Christmas gift. But this was the first time where I actually, like, handed out gifts that I had bought for somebody else. And, you know, I put some effort into... They weren't big gifts or anything like that. I think I got her brother just a simple belt. I knew I should get it from Spencer's, you know? Shit like that was... And he was, like, stoked to have some fucking, I don't know, rancid belt or some whatever I got him.
Yeah.
And that felt good. So, I mean, I've been in parts of giving gifts, but it was nice to be part of a little bit of a custom...
The first participation.
Yeah. And then afterward, in the evening, the family, like the cousins started coming over, and the cousins and aunts and whoever, like extended family, and we had a meal, which was nice too.
Yeah, I do remember that story.
I didn't have to fake any surprise because everything was a surprise to me. I was like, I can't believe you guys actually got me anything. I felt like an intruder.
It felt like an intrusion?
Well, you know, fly on the wall. You know?
Oh, sure.
You know, there was a certain point in the COVID pandemic where I think people treated it like an alien invasion. Like, if aliens were coming down, I'm going to the closest church or the closest friend or, like, whoever it has a panic room, you know, something like this.
Oh, yeah. Well, when this started happening, I thought about The Watchmen quite a bit. Have you ever read that graphic novel?
No, I've only seen the movie, and then I saw some clips of it. Yeah. I know the movie. I heard the movie did justice, but I heard this TV show.
Well, it was weird how it all transpired because when the quarantine happened, I did think about the original Watchmen because it's very much like at the end there's a fake alien invasion and it codifies the whole world in a way and like. We're not going through that, but we are going through something that the whole world is going through. But then when protests started happening, it reminded me of the TV show, The Watchmen, which, a lot of people are talking about and drawing analogies to. I don't know, it was just weird that those two pieces of pop culture were very relevant to the whole sort of span of what is happening right now.
Well, you know, I'll be, it's one of those things that it's fun to talk to you because I can be honest about this with you knowing that I'm not absolutely insane, but the concept of like the way out there idea of us being able to manifest our own realities and, you know,
I always think about what I and brainwashed too that I'm not aware of.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. And to think like that these stimuli that we've been pushed to, the extremities of human, you know, like this polarization of humans and non-humans really has become that thing of there's a point where we're starting to dehumanize the other side, you know, the right or these racist pieces of shit want to talk and call them illegals or whatever and name them other things than humans. But now we're literally becoming, the word racist has become something that's like non-human or just being able to, it's a polarization. And not to get too heavy on it, but just the idea that we think about aliens, we've been watching movies or also like, I there's some reason why I've been thinking about like hearing in the past how before Rome collapsed in Greek cult, like these massive other cultures, they leaned towards superhuman, talking about Zeus and these gods, you know, and superhuman things right before the collapse of their society, because they're literally calling out to the human nature in our own selves of seeing injustice and stepping up, trying to inspire the common person to just not become voiceless and shout out. But when you have when you have 1,000 people doing that also, I don't want to be the dude who says, all right, everybody calm down because I'm kind of pro evolution. But, you know, the other end of it is a revolution. I don't want to see a revolution. That's the thing. I don't want to see a revolution of it going back to where it was. I want to see an evolution as to going past what we are.
I can remember in, I think it was seventh grade, I had a history teacher talk to us about how learning about the American Revolution and just like early American times, you know, and he said that America got their independence through revolution and Canada got their independence through evolution. And he was telling seventh graders that it was like, if you go to Canada, you'll find a different kind of person because we're taught to revolt and they're taught to evolve.
Yeah, it's a different thing. And you know, it's weird because personally I am revolted in so many of the concepts that are happening in America, but mm-hmm. but I don't want to, and I do
good
want
use of language.
But yeah, thank you. It's my first language, so I'm killing it.
The analogy I thought you were hinting at, I mean, I think you were, was the Greeks and the Romans talking about the superhuman, and now currently,
yes.
Like we have the MCU and that stuff. It's like,
sure, that's exactly it. Yeah, I was watching Justice League last night with Ma'am, my girlfriend, and she knew all the characters but hadn't seen this mm-hmm. amalgamation of it. And I was just saying how, like, it's been in the back of my mind, exactly what you were just saying. This, like, idea of the superhuman coming to save the normal people. But I think just like that, just like Jesus, you know, there was a time when, you know, Jesus was, I think, an amalgamation of a couple people who mm-hmm. just voiced their disapproval of what was happening at the time. And things needed to be changed, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a trip, too. I go back to, like, how much is it, you know, this... It's not just Trump. It's, I think I told you the other day, my newest bit is thinking, like, it's like watching a breakup of a family and knowing that there's two sides to both stories. And you're, like, husband and wife just, like, fighting, and you're just, like, you guys are done. Figure it out.
Right. Yeah, we'll see. There's, I don't know, encouraging things happening, but also some, like, startling things still going on, continually going on.
Yeah, there is. There's a shit ton of optimism. It's one of those things where the people who are, I feel like, who know that there's injustice is happening are so staunch on, like, holding their ground because of if this, then what? This fear of, like, well, if we give up and we relinquish XYZ... and just become truly equal. My most recent thought process is, well, what the only thing is that they could be scared of is retribution. This idea of punishment, of
oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it's like, because everybody can agree that things are going wrong, but then they go, but what happens if they do this? What happens if this happens? It's like, you're just scared of getting punished. You know?
Right, right.
That's it.
And that's not what the other side is even saying.
No. But I understand it because it's human nature. Sure. But I don't know if it's all human nature or not. I don't know. It might be this dumb... you know, I was talking to a friend recently about it. And actually, in why we started talking about this. I was just talking to Chris Wagoda. He's a club owner here. He owns a club, comedy club, Bangkok. And we were mm-hmm. trying to talk about the future of comedy in Bangkok and Asia and just comedy in general and just what was going on in the world. It just devolved because it's hard not to go from the macro into the micro because that's what we're asking. It's like, what is happening outside in the world to what's happening now? So I brought up this point of fear of retribution. And he hadn't seen that yet. Fuck. I got so sidetracked on thinking about me talking about...
You'll get it.
...that I forgot what got me into that thought process. Sorry.
Well, you were on a fear of retribution tear, which is a thought that I had as well, but I hadn't placed that nice sort of phrase with it.
Yeah. Well, it's that thing, you know, we all recognize that these kind of things move in a pendulum, right? And this, like, mm-hmm. momentum swings in a certain way. And I might have said it to you before, but I'd said it to him, was knowing that the pendulum's swinging back, how much, if you give it, how much resistance does it make it swing too far? You know, because at some point I'm kind of like, well, let the pendulum swing too far, because at least then maybe we could pull it back that way. But so far, at least in my life, I've only seen reasons to stop the pendulum from swinging. And it's like, that's not justice, you know? And that's not equality. And, yeah. And it's, and you know what's interesting, talking to him about it too, is because he's from Britain. He's half British, half Thai. And, but it's so interesting that America is so, even though it's so in the core of what's happening to the world, he brought up how, like, you know, South Africa has a Black Lives Matter movement, yet they're, like, you know, doing a whole nother thing over there. And they have so many other issues, compared to what America has. It might be, it might be just the tip of the needle that talks about going after the real hierarchy, you know? It's just that it's such an obvious thing to point at is injustice between races, but the real hierarchy of, like, just, you know, I'm not saying to kill Jeff Bezos, but the guy should not have that kind of money, you know? That kind of thing, when you actually see the real wealth redistribution of what's going on, and seeing, like, Obama, you know, like, so many things that Obama did. Like, the worst thing that Trump did is this whole COVID thing, this massive wealth redistribution happened. That was second to only Obama's, you know, wealth redistribution, you know?
You know,
so it's weird that there's two parties, but they just did the same fucking thing. And yet we're pointing fingers at, you know, there's a surface, and that's obviously something that needs to be corrected. But then there's another layer that really... It needs to be corrected as well, you know? I don't know. I don't know how I got there, man. I'm high as a kite.
I don't know. We got here organically somehow. I mean, it made sense while we were living in it. I'm a little high, too, by the way.
One of the best things is people recognizing that marijuana is a necessary... How do they classify it? One of the essentials?
Oh, essentials? Oh, yeah. I when we started doing this...
I'll tell you, you never seem like a guy who needs to chill out, but I also appreciate that every time I've offered you any kind of mind-altering substance, you've said yes to it, too, which is beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
Well, A, you're fun to be around, and B, you're fun to be stoned with.
Yeah, man. Same. Likewise. Yeah. You know, but you know what's the truth is, like, the first time anything ever racist happened to me, I felt like I was the bad guy. And that's how programmed my... I get pulled over and somebody going like, Alejandro Morales, and start saying it like... And literally threatening to, like... they would threaten to beat the shit out of me. Whatever that would mean.
Yeah.
You know? And so it was like... You're like, wow, that's... And the dude who was with me... has a name, he's half Puerto Rican, half German, but his last name is German, and he had no threats put towards him.
This story I do remember.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, when that happened, I just thought I was lucky that nothing happened. Not that this motherfucker was racist. These pieces of shit were, like, coming down on me when I didn't do nothing wrong.
Right.
And so, and literally also, too, when you really break it down... Sometimes I talk, when I talk like that, and I could get street, because that's where I came from, but then even improv, and like our group that we were in, right, I got whitewashed. I got fucking whitewashed in that way of just trying to fit in a group, because I wanted to perform comedy so bad, that I couldn't speak the way I wanted to speak, because I didn't fit in that way. And it never made, you know, it never individually, like, it never made me feel like, oh, fuck these guys or anything like that. But in hindsight, it was definitely one of those things where it's like, man, that softened my shit. And maybe it refined me into certain ways that pushed me into something that could make me into a better performer in some ways. But I also think it hurt me in a lot of ways, you know? So it's, you evaluate yourself. Did I tell you my mom called me? Sorry, I'm on a diatribe.
No, that's all right.
My mom called me and said, she's like, oh, I guess I'm racist. And I was like, did I tell you that? Yeah. So, and she's not. I mean, but she is, because she recognizes her own biases, and she's open to that.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
The onion peels back, and you start seeing these things. And people recognizing you're not picking a team, but just trying to be a good person. Don't worry about where the line is drawn. We'll talk about it when we get there, you know? Just fucking, if you know there's an injustice.
Did you see that video of the cop in the McDonald's drive-through crying about not getting her sandwich?
Yes.
Did you see that video?
Yeah, yeah.
It, I mean, I thought about that in just a lot of things that I've been seeing over and over and over again. And I got to the point where I was like, it's that some cops are definitely bad. Some cops are definitely shielding other bad cops. But then there's also these certain cops, and who knows where she falls, but there's other cops who are thinking to themselves, I've been following the rules the whole time. And now all these people are saying that I'm bad, but how is that possible? Because I've been following the rules.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
and the rules have been bad.
The rules have been bad. Yeah. Well, I feel like maybe I'm a shitty person or I don't think I am a shitty person, but.
Well, we all are on some scale.
This is what I'll say is, you know, if I saw that 6 months ago, a year ago, I would have been less empathetic to this girl. But now when I see it, I go, that woman shouldn't be a cop.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah,
she is so mentally unstable that she thinks that somebody is like poisoning her food just because she can't watch them make it.
Right, right.
It's so much of an us versus them on this end of it. And I'm like, that girl is not mentally stable enough to recognize a real threat. And that's mm-hmm. part of the problem, too. That she recognizes that she's part of the problem. And she hasn't mm-hmm. voiced her opinion or anything like that up until this point where now it's affecting her that she can't get breakfast. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like, well, you know, I've seen these videos happen during these protests. And you see these people who get hurt, the protesters, and yeah, it's not every cop that swings the club, right? But every cop is not mm-hmm. stopping that other cop, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's what I look at is if you see 70 people, 70 cops, and one dude, like I saw this one dude in, I think it was Minnesota, but guy gets a little canister shot at his foot as he's mm-hmm. filming, and then he literally turns his camera towards the guy who shot at him, and starts pointing at it. Another cop comes up, punches him. The other guy who shot at him punches him. And then they pull him behind the barricade. And then there's like seven cops who jump on this guy. The guy was just walking past him. There's 70 cops and nobody says, what you're doing is illegal. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, man, it's hard not to just say, fucking burn it down, you know? Yeah, and honestly, you know, that's why I feel like, I feel shitty because I do think Trump is a real problem. But it's like, You know, Obama got us Trump. That's how I look at it. And honestly, if there was somebody else, like if Bernie wasn't such a bitch and let everybody just like him just endorsing everybody, this is what I'll give you. My prognosticism is this, that Democrats are just throwing, they just want, like they're selling the bill. If the Democrats win, they're selling the idea to, it'll stop a revolution. It'll stop if you just, you know, lick boots,
mm-hmm.
You'll stop a civil war. Right. You know, because if Trump wins, I think there might be a civil war.
I wouldn't have agreed with that 3-6 months ago, but yeah, now I do more. I don't want to.
And if the Democrats win, it'll pacify the masses, but you won't get shit done. You're not, you know. It's not, the bar is not there. Biden is not the dude. Biden put more, you know, his crime bills put more black people away. He's still not talking about health care. He's not talking about, he's going back to what Obama was, which is what got everybody into Trump. So the insanity to think, man, I hate thinking political, but.
I hear what you're saying, but I mean, nobody lives in a glass jar. So it's sort of like, there's no way that he would be the same person that he was 5 years ago. I mean, I wouldn't think.
Biden?
Yeah. He's still not the change we want, but he had to have changed, I would think, at least a little bit from who he was 5 years ago. But
I agree. I do get that. I do want us to, you're right. Thank you for making me remind myself that people can change.
But you're not wrong.
but I'm not, true. I am not wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck, man. It's a crazy time, dude. And did I tell you my other premise that I'm thinking about, which is so interesting that going back to Stoner Morning Show, but I feel like the only reason why they legalize weed is because they realize that it doesn't make us not hate each other. You know?
I had a thought a few weeks ago, and it was if Trump announces that they're forgiving all student loans, it means they know the shit's about to hit the fan, and they're just trying to, like...
just like...
Calm us down.
Yeah. It's getting everything... Throwing everything off ship that was weighing you down. You just...
Right.
The trip, man. My thought went to talking about me being out in Bangkok. I'm hoping, you know, right now, all the Asian countries are shut down. I was hoping to tour more of Asia, but I started in Bangkok because there was such an interesting comedy scene that was happening here. And I'm going to be finally sitting down with comics in this area because everybody's itching to do something. We're just starting to do... We might have our first show on Saturday, but who knows what... literally in the whole city. You know, I sat with a couple comics and I realized that the whole reason why I was here was to talk to fucking local comedians and see how they were inspired to do comedy... What kind of situations were happening out here as to, like, what their view of comedy is.
If it's different from American comedy or if there's how much overlap there is.
Right now I'm starting to talk to some Thai comics who perform whatever one. You know, there's magicians, there's a mentalist, and he's been doing stand-up comedy in English, but in Thai he performs... a mentalist act. There's a guy who's half Thai, half French. He does magic, and he's got a couple, like a million YouTube followers, and that I'm just, you know, interested in how they've done it before, and then also interested in seeing the thirst of what's happening now, this bubbling of what's happening. And before COVID happened, they had a competition here in Thailand. And a whole bunch of, there was Chinese people who came over, I got introduced to, and people from Vietnam and Malaysia and Jakarta. Eventually, when I can get out of this country, I'm going to go see those people as well. But at least as of now, since I'm in Thailand, I'm going to be talking to a lot of local comics, and hopefully you guys are going to, the audience will be interested in.
I think so, yeah. We're definitely in a, it was interesting how when I first found out that I was going to be leaving New York, and I was either talking to Ralph or texting with Ralph just about this quarantine situation, and we were both like, man, we're all going to be different when we get back. Somehow, we don't know how.
Yep.
And then, like, protests started happening, Black Lives Matter movement stepped up. I don't know. It's just like we were right, but we were so off on the specifics of it. So I think we are in a time where people are more open learning about other people that they haven't been exposed to. And, you know,
well, I'll tell you. You inspired me to say it, and that's why I love you so much, but helped me to clarify my thoughts. But the reason why I'm so interested in that, but I'm more interested in the comedy, like it's one of those things that everybody has this. It unifies us. It unifies us. And I watch these.
Everybody laughs.
Yeah, everybody laughs, because everybody hurts, and no matter what we want to think, and not to get too highbrow about comedy, but it's a healing mechanism. And it's hard to make jokes, and we've barely been funny through this conversation. But, you know, and we're very funny people, but like, you know, it's hard to make fun of it when the pain is still hurting, you know? So I don't know. Yeah. We're all going to be changed. Our comedy is going to be changed and all that jazz. But, you know, in the Stoner Morning, mindset, to the idea of promoting people who need to be promoted because they're just trying to do something that a lot of people aren't aware of. And also just the idea of trying to send positivity and love, healing.
And joy.
Yeah, that's it, man. That's it.
One change that I thought might happen prior to the necessary race discussion we're having is that I felt maybe people would be more forgiving of others if somebody just looked like a mess when they left their house.
Yeah, yeah.
We've all lived a messy life over the last 2 or 3 months. It would be just like, oh, I've gone out like that. Or I've been not put together, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. If you're walking around in slippers, you go, you know what, give this guy a break. This might be the first time he's been out of his house in 3 months.
Yeah, yeah.
It's when Will Smith met the girl from who's driving in I Am Legend, remember?
Mm-hmm.
He hadn't talked to anybody in months. She helped him get, you know, stitch up his injury, cooked him breakfast.
Right, right.
And he didn't know how to react.
Yeah, it's like that.
He hasn't had human contact, a little empathy. But thank you. I love you so much.
Love you too, yeah.
And we'll talk sooner than we expect.
Sounds beautiful.
I love smoking with you.
Yeah, I agree.
See you, buddy.
This has been another excellent episode of Stoner Morning Show. Thanks for listening. Follow us on social media at Stoner Morning Show. Tell your friends. And puff puff pass.